Hey there, welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show Extra Ice Time podcast. Ryan Johnston, Billy Jaffe.
What's up?
And it is game three in the books. Game four coming up on Thursday night. We're going to spend a lot of time breaking down the Bruins and the Maple Leafs in game three.
Yeah,
and
talk about it.
Hey, you know what? After game two, I think there were a lot of people wondering if this was really going to be a series. We expected it was going to be a tough, hard-fought, maybe seven-game series.
I had to fill out a bracket heading into the playoffs. I hate doing it because I'm always wrong, but I had to for the NHL Network. And I put down Bruins in seven, and I firmly believed it because I firmly believed that there would be kind of changes in personality in this series, and I think we saw a little bit of that in game three. I don't know about you. I don't know what you – did you have to do a prediction or no? Did you get off the hook?
I said on this show last week, seven. This is a seven-game series, Bruins and seven. So
there you go. So, yeah, I mean, there's a way to lose and you feel like crap about it, and there's a way to lose and you feel okay about it. Never want to lose, right? Don't want to see your team lose. But, A, you know it's going to happen because it happens. B, I didn't think that the Bruins lost poorly. I didn't think it was a great game. But I sure as heck didn't think it was an awful performance by them in game three.
Well, you come away from the game, and I mean, you can't say the Bruins didn't have their chances, right? I mean, they had
But they also gave chances.
Oh, they sure did. But you know what? They had some ridiculous scoring chances, especially in that third period. They came strong in the third period, and, you know, I mean, sometimes a goalie like Freddie Anderson is going to make ridiculous highlight reel saves on you,
and
you know, I mean, the one that has everybody talking about it after game three, the diving play. But he made some really good saves last night.
He did, and he let in some bad goals too.
Yep,
he did. I haven't been overly impressed with him. Was I impressed with his compete level last night? Yes. Was I impressed though with his overall performance? I mean, it had that road hockey element to it. There's no doubt about it. I'd call it kind of Tim Thomas-like, albeit a different body size, a different style and net. But when it's all said and done, I mean, yeah, he made some great saves. This is what he did during the regular season. There's a reason that didn't he face the most shots of any goalie in the NHL this year?
Yes.
Okay. So he had numerous 35-plus, 40-plus shot-on-goal games because the defense for Toronto, team defense, not just their D crew, but team defense, is average at best, and I think that's being kind at times. And he's able to sustain that. He reminds me in that way about another former great Toronto netminder in Curtis Joseph, who loved the 35-40-plus shot-on-goal game because of his athleticism. And Freddie has that to him. But he also has an awkwardness to his game that the Bruins have exposed. And I still saw some of that in game three, despite his acrobatic saves.
Well, and you brought up the best point, I think, about what he faces on a night-in, night-out basis has a lot to do with the guys in front of him. And we saw, I think, at times in games one and two, those guys not necessarily putting in the effort. Not only some bad giveaways and things like that, but there were clear indications of, you know, forwards who weren't back-checking hard enough. You know, that
they were lost.
Yeah.
They were lost. I always have a hard time questioning a guy's effort. I think, though, that because, you know, I'm not with them in the room or on the bench where you can really tell.
Yeah.
You can tell. You can get that pulse, that heart rate of a guy that give a heck meter, you know. I think in Boston they got like, oh, my, really? They got oh, my'd, you know. they got overwhelmed. They got that insecure feeling. And when that happens sometimes, there's this moment of, oh, I'm looking, I'm not participating, I don't know where to go, I want to work, but I'm scared almost. Like, I'm like overwhelmed, right? Think of that little kid who's walking into that big event, or to them it's a big event, and they're just kind of like, oh boy, looking up. I felt that's how Toronto was at times. They were better in game three. They were more confident being home in game three. Were they great? No. The Bruins had their chances, like you said. They were all right. The second period was of the nine periods that we've seen, the second period was the worst that the Bruins had.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And we're not being critical, just being honest. there was openness. I think the change, the long change in the second period impacted him a bit in game three. And there was some discombobulation of picking up, you know, stretch plays. It happens. But again, I said it this morning, I didn't have this going five. I really didn't have it going six. I had it going seven. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's Bruins in, you know, I'd love it to be Bruins in five. But my guess is it's probably a six-game series for sure.
We saw last night the stretch plays that you're talking about. We know that's, you know, a big part of Toronto's game. We've seen them trying it a lot. It didn't work nearly as well in the first couple of games as it did last night. What's the difference there? What happened?
Their D were better, getting pucks and getting them out. They were quicker to pucks. I felt like, again, I'll give Toronto some credit. Excuse me. They won more battles. They did. They actually won more battles. They spent some less time in their own zone. Good time for a cough. I thought that they were quicker with their thought process. And they shot guys out, even just a little quicker. They shot them out, and they got into areas. It wasn't like the Bruins were having a turnover fest, RJ. It wasn't, you know, there were a couple. There were a few that turned into transition the other way, but it wasn't like, oh my God, the last five games of the season where they're turning the puck over egregiously all the time in the neutral zone or at the offensive blue line. But I really think that it was a better performance from guys like Morgan Riley, Ron Hainsey. I thought the forward support was better too. So it's not just about the D getting the puck. It's also that low forward helping them. And then if they stretch the zone, by the way, if they don't even go to that long stretch, but they go to that low guy coming up with speed, it seems like a stretch because the neutral zone's wider open. They've pulled back one Bruin defender, but it's the low guy swinging with the puck too, or getting the puck in stride. And I thought there was more of that last night.
And again, you talked about the forward support. I think that, you know, that enters into it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what I was talking about earlier with, you know, maybe questioning the effort or them being overwhelmed in the first couple of games was they weren't providing that forward support. And when you have defensemen who, look, I mean, they're mediocre defense. I mean, they're not a good defensive team. You need that forward support even more.
Exactly. There's a reason that the Bruins a layered attack that we always talk about. When it's on because the forwards are pushing, and then the D are closing or finishing. And they push, the forwards can push them into places where it's uncomfortable to go. They can strip pucks, they can get pucks. We saw a little more of that from Toronto. I mean, they had some more energy. There's no doubt about it. I thought some of the lineup changes that Babcock made, I don't feel regret not doing them sooner, but I think he'll look at it and be like, okay, I saw more of it. I mean, Plekanec to that second line. I don't know if he can sustain that over the series. That's going to be interesting. He was able to sustain it when he was in Montreal for the last couple of years as that guy. Can he do that now with Toronto regularly? That's going to be interesting. And I thought their fourth line was their best fourth line of the series. You know, Dom Moore was there. The kid Janssen was there. And Kapanen. Kapanen was really good.
Well, they needed to find, you know, from the Toronto perspective, they needed to find some sort of answer for the Bergeron line, because they were running roughshod over this team.
Yep.
No matter what they tried. What did they find last night? Was it, you know, was it personnel matchups? Was it? It seemed, especially for the first two periods, that line didn't have a lot of time and space. Pasternak, you know, he had some really good scoring chances later on in the game.
Yep.
But they didn't seem to have the ability to control the puck the way they had for the most part in the first two games of the series.
Toronto pushed it away from them more. They were on them quicker. There's no doubt about it. Again, especially when they entered into the offensive zone, there was nowhere near the offensive zone sustained pressure that they had. Thomas Plekanec, you would say he did his job. He did. He did his job getting elevated from the fourth line to the second line. I had a chat with one of his former coaches, and I asked him about Thomas. I said, "Is he still have it? Do you think he still has it? Can he do this?" And he said, you know, I'm quoting here, good attitude, really good pro, always well prepared. And this guy's opinion is that he wasn't fitting right into Toronto as well because his role wasn't nearly as defined as it was with Montreal. And in Montreal, he was a lot of times that shutdown guy a lot until, I mean, this year was pretty bad in Montreal, so his role got changed a little bit as they couldn't score. But that, and also the number one PK guy. He was the first guy over the boards if it was, you know, for the penalty kill. He's not the first PK guy in Toronto. He wasn't the first matchup guy in Toronto. And he was changing systems a little bit, despite the fact he came over at trade deadline for a guy who'd spent his entire career in Montreal. It was a big change, and he didn't look comfortable in the first few games. So he looked comfortable with his defined role, and this was the most ice time. He played about 18 minutes in this game.
Well, last week on the podcast, we talked with John Shannon from up at Sportsnet up in Canada, and you asked him specifically about Plekanec, and he kind of shrugged and said he hasn't really been, you know, been the same guy.
Average.
He's not, you know,
average.
hasn't been a guy that you want to talk about.
Average. Yes.
In a Canadian accent.
Average.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so, you know, maybe it's as simple as that. It's like, look, here's what we need you to do tonight. We need you to go and be a shutdown guy.
I don't know if people understand how much most of these players, despite the fact, and this goes for all athletes at professional level, despite the fact that they're pros and they're making the money and they're the best in the business, right? These guys need structure. They crave structure. They crave guidance. There's always that guy that, you know, doesn't need anything to be said to him. But even a guy, you know, like a Chara, like a Bergeron, who've been around forever now and they're so good, they want to know that they're being, you know, here, this is our game plan. This is what we need you to do. Now, those guys are at that extraterrestrial level or whatever you want to call it, not Uber level. They might not need it. But a guy like Plekanec, I think he needs a certain type of direction, and he got it. And again, can he sustain that is going to be the question. I'm not sitting here and saying I'm making him out to be Frank Selke, you know, I mean, or Bob Gainey or even Patrice Bergeron. But he gave that line that solidified that line, putting him up there. And it gave them direction, too. It gave them focus. And I think that had their antennas up. And it helped. It absolutely helped. Matthews was much more noticeable. You could tell it. You could see his euphoria and his celebration. But also, just in the way he carried himself, his body, where his shots were coming from, and his feel, you could see that. And he's a bull, man. He is a bull out there. He's a special player. It might be hard for Bruins fans to appreciate that right now, given the rivalry in this series. But RJ, he's a special player, and he sniped over there. I know there was I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Barry. Didn't love the goal that Matthews scored.
It was a hell of a shot.
I thought it was a hell of a shot. I thought it was a hell of a shot. I did. Short side, snipe city. Oh my.
Yeah, it's. I mean, look again. Sometimes you just have to tip your hat and say, "Other guy made a hell of a play," and I felt like that's. You know, we saw a fair amount of that last night. From the Bruins' perspective, talking about the Bergeron line, you know, we again saw Pastrnak get some great A scoring chances, especially late in that game.
Yeah, and if you're into the advanced stats stuff and everything, they still as a line they were over 50%. I think Bergeron was in his regular 54-55%. Marchand was 53. Pasta was at 50.
So I felt like Marchand was kind of missing for a good chunk of that game last night.
I would agree. He wasn't that normal. Like, he controlled the game in game one and two. He did. He controlled it. Pasta finished it. He controlled the game. We didn't see that as much.
The Pastrnak chances that they were able to generate, again, especially in the third period, some really good ones. Normally, you're going to see him finish those.
Right.
You know, just one of those nights, right?
Right. And the way he had handled it after the game, I think he had similar words used that Austin Matthews did after game two. Remember when he Forrest Gumped it and says, hey, it happens? I still don't know what we're allowed to say on the show when we're not. So, he basically said, it happens when he was asked about.
He said sometimes you know you have a great day, sometimes you have a crappy day.
Right.
You know?
And then and the Pastrnak did the same thing after game three, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to worry about it. He wasn't being flippant. It's just, I'm not going to worry about it. Just like game one and game two are over, game three is over. I would think that he would be able to finish one of those, given those same opportunity in the next game. He was in the right spot. He had the right thought process. He didn't hesitate. He put it into a beautiful area. He hit post, though, and he hit goalie stick one-time paddle. I mean, it's a brutally, wonderfully frustrating game at times, and I think that's where it was.
All right, something a lot of people are going to be frustrated about last night.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
The delay of game penalty.
Yeah.
You know. Look. It's a difficult call to make in that scenario, obviously, because we looked at it on the replays, and there really wasn't the most conclusive.
No, the last one seemed to be
the one from ice level.
Yeah, and that we showed in post game.
Mm.
Actually, there was one that was shown on the show the Nesson tonight. You know, Nesson Sports after hours that they even showed it more. They slowed it down more, and they zoomed in and highlighted, they shadowed it and everything, and it looked like, I'd say 99.9% sure that it hit the glass.
I mean, as much as Riley Nash was
adamant,
yeah. I mean, you can generally tell from a guy's reaction whether he's just, you know, trying to buy a call or whether he's, I mean, Riley Nash was really steamed about that.
He was, and here's a guy who's always got good composure about him, and he was adamant that it nicked off the glass. One of the linesmen, and doing the right thing, he's covering up because he sees the play coming up the wall, so he didn't see it. I've said this before. I put it out on social media last night. I'm not a fan of the replay, especially for offside. I'm not. I want to get rid of it. But we have it, and if we're going to have it, why the hell wouldn't we use it for this call? Why wouldn't we?
Yeah, see, I look.
Why wouldn't we?
I can't be hypocritical because I've gotten to the point across all sports, I'm ready to dump instant replay.
I am too.
I just, you know what? Let the calls, you know, the officials are there to make the calls. Occasionally they're going to get one wrong. That's just going to be part of the game. It was for a long time.
I'm fine with that.
Yes.
For all of them, though.
Yes.
But since we have it, like, what the hell aren't we using it for that? Because I don't believe. I think one guy said, I think I saw it go out.
Well, that's the thing. So all four officials get together.
Right.
They didn't call it right off the bat, right? All four officials get together and talk about it, and the consensus is we think it's a penalty?
Yeah. It's like, hey, let's go here for lunch. Let's go here for lunch. No, this is where we're going to go for lunch. That's your consensus. You know, I get crap for it sometimes because I like the officials. I do, having been one for a couple of years, 4 or 5 years, the NCAA level. But it's a brutally hard job. But it's not the officials here, by the way. It's the league. They have this replay system in place.
So you have they have the ability to fix it if they want, and they're not doing it.
Well, a few people say, well, what about, though, if you can't tell? Well, what about the whole conclusive, inconclusive goal thing when it's around the goal? We still have that.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is this. What you do is this. You go to your consensus, and I think, to me, it'd be better to say, we couldn't tell. We couldn't tell on the ice if it went off the glass or not. Let's use the replay. Well, we need a call then. Well, no, we can't tell. So if you can't tell, and your initial thought is, well, wait a second. If we're going to put a team on a power play or put on a penalty kill, we better be sure about this. Go to the replay and see if you can tell. If you can't tell off the replay, I guess then you have to go with your rock, paper, scissor, what do you say here, and make your decision.
Well, see, again, when you are talking about giving somebody a power play in a playoff game, you know, every goal is important, every goal is that much more magnified. To me, that's like, especially because the way the rest of the game gets officiated, they were letting guys, you know, get away with a fair amount last night, I thought. The Bruins didn't have a power play until the third period, and right. Toronto only had one penalty, or only had the one power play at that point as well. And mm-hmm. So it's like they're letting the game go. They're letting the game play. To me, if you aren't 100% absolutely dead sure, then you go, you know what? None of us could tell. We think it caught the glass, and, you know, which way are you going to have a bigger impact on the game, by giving the team a power play or not?
That's the question. It's a good question. Yeah, like we can really dive into it if you, and I don't know, we want to. Should they even have this delay a game rule in place as it is.
Well, there isn't a rule I hate more in sports than the automatic delay a game penalty.
Right, but so do you want to put the? See, I was actually okay with the rule because to me it's black or white.
Until it's not.
But to me, that's where if you want to, this is as close to a black and white rule as we have. Really is.
Yeah. I like the college rule, which is it's not a penalty, but you don't get to change. So, somebody said that during the game on Twitter. Guys will be shooting it into the stands but it'll be like an icing. You got to keep your tired guys out there anyway.
Right. But if we're looking to create, we're in a hypocritical situation in general in the league because we want more offense. Yet they're finding ways with reviews and everything to take it away at times. But they want more offense. And therefore, I think you need to be forced to keep the puck in play as much as possible. And now if you're saying to not allow it to be, not to have it be a penalty, just to be an icing, treat it like an icing like they do in college, you could have two or three of those a game where a guy just gets it, phew, out of the play, here you go. Then that becomes, you've dumbed down the game even more from the defensive end. Dumbed it down even more. And I don't think I'm in favor of that. Now, I get it that there's accidents. What I don't like is when a player bats the puck and goes out of play.
Which happened to Toronto in game two, right? Wasn't the puck in the air and it went over the Bruins bench?
Right. And it happened in one of the other series 2 nights ago I was watching too. He swatted it. I can't remember which one. West Coast. And I'm like, this is where let's use common sense here. So it should be a shot out of play. Whether it's an accident or not, it should be a shot out of play, not a bat like when it's like it. But I think you keep the rule. You end up using some replay. If I'm going to have replay in my life in the NHL, then I don't want it used for everything, but this is black and white, relatively speaking.
All right, let's get off of that. Let's talk a little bit about – we talked about the lineup adjustments that Mike Babcock made going into game three. Bruins got Riley Nash back in game three. Well, you know what?
He was good. He's fine.
Yeah. He's fine.
Yeah.
He's fine. And look, we've talked over the course of especially the second half of the season how important a guy he has become for this team.
Yeah.
So he gets back into the lineup, necessitates Donato coming out of the lineup again.
Yeah, no problem.
Which I don't have a problem with either. Yeah. And again, especially if you like game two when he did get in the lineup, he only got like 9 minutes.
Right.
Right.
This is a learning curve, right? He's still got two classes left at Harvard that he's doing. And one is like Hebrew cultural scriptures or something. Like that sounded hard, but this is even harder, man. This is a real education he's having right now, and that's fine. Just like his course load, he's going to handle it. He's an impressive kid. He's going to be all right. But it's a little bit of a process.
But he's also dropped into a team that it's very deep and has been very good all season long. And, somebody asked me about that the other day. It's like, well, when Nash comes in, who sits? I said, well, Donato has to sit. Because who else are you going to take out of the lineup right now? I want that third line together. With Nash and Heinen and Backes, I want those guys together. They play very well together.
I want that
fourth line together.
Right.
And obviously you don't have a hole on the top two lines right now.
No. That third line is, for me, I call that warm, comfy blanket. I do, because you know what you're going to get, and you use that blanket sometimes when it's really cold out, and other times to wrap yourself in it, and other times when you don't need the warmth so much, you use the lay-on, meaning it's multi-purpose. This line, that third line with Riley Nash back, is multi-purpose. Now, to me, a lot of times guys like playing every other day. I'm curious if this will help having 2 days off in between games for Riley Nash that much more. He gets back the one day, a lot of build up to it. He gets today off. He'll skate hard on Wednesday, and then he'll be ready for Thursday. I wonder if that recovery will be good for him, or if he would prefer to have a game right away again. But I have no issue with the lineup changes that they made. Grizz, we'll wait and see how he is for game four. I don't have an update. You know how updates are hard. I don't think McQuaid is serious.
It sounded like he was okay in the locker room after the game. He caught the puck in the throat. It's obviously something you need to monitor, but that
you need to make sure there's nothing cracked.
He was speaking just a little quieter after the game.
Right. Well, he always speaks pretty quietly. but yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, I think he'll be right. Now, the question will be Holden, being dropped into that series on the road right there. He just looked okay to me in that game. And I think he's better than what he showed. I think we had a question come in, by the way, and one of our people listening or going to be listening about Holden, and I thought he was okay, and I think he'll be much better if he has to play again in Game 4. But you can tell that Grizz, you know, in his maneuverability, his elusiveness, perhaps was missing a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I think we talked about this on the show a little bit last week, but Holden to me is a solid depth addition. I don't necessarily trust him as much as I trust the rest of the top six right now, but
because you don't know him though?
Yeah, part of it.
Because I thought he was damn good at times when he played for the Bruins early on.
That's the problem. Is I feel like that there's some inconsistency there.
But he's a third pair guy. What do you want? I mean, holy smokes!
Well,
you know?
Okay,
I mean,
but comparing him to the third pair guys you have on this team,
yeah.
I say he's number seven.
I would agree, but I also think with regular playing time, he would elevate his game. You got to understand, man, when you're a player and you've been playing, and he was playing, I'm going to say 20 minutes, maybe it was 18 or 19 with New York, and then he comes in and he played some heavy-duty minutes with the Bees too, remember? When he was acquired, he played some heavy minutes. And you go from that to not playing, it's not only your confidence, but it's actually your skill set that starts going in some different directions. So I would think if he plays a little more, you might see a little different effort or result.
You mentioned one of your colleagues on Ness, and Barry Peterson, mm-hmm. had some issues with.
Well, he just said, it was not harsh at all. He's
no,
just like,
I, and I don't, yeah. You know, look, it, but we've talked at length about Tuca, and some people will, no matter what he does, if he,
I know.
Are not going to think it's acceptable.
If the Bruins win the cup and Tuca's the goalie, there will be a group of people that say, did they get lucky to win it with Tuca?
Yeah, of course there will.
Right.
That said, I think he's been pretty good in the series so far.
Yeah, I didn't love the Marleau goal. That one he lost his angle on. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I screwed up a few words last night on the air. You know, my point is that that's going to happen, and you try not to have it happen again. But he's been real good.
But you know what?
He's been
real good. For every one of those, though, there's him coming up huge on a breakaway. He has made some really good saves. And even in the game, in the two games where they won, where obviously the spreads are, you know, four goals a game.
Yeah.
But there were times in both of those games where he made big saves to keep Toronto from getting back
absolutely.
In that game, where the ice was starting to tilt, and he had to come up big at the right time.
Yeah, Tuca's focus, I feel like, in this series and his composure have been excellent. He has been so much more composed than Freddie Anderson has, and so much, and that's all we have to compare it to. It's not goalie against goalie, but that's what we have to compare it to right now. You know, Grant Fuhr would always say this. Sometimes I give up five, but if we win 6-5, that's all that mattered, is that I made that sixth save. And I remember doing a show with Grant Fuhr about a year and a half ago and talking specifically about giving up goals and his ability just to compartmentalize them and his ability to say, well, my job is to stop as many as I can, help my team out. And if I let them down, I'm going to stop them. I'm going to make sure I try and stop the next one. And that's where Tuca has to be. And so far, so good in this series.
All right, let's bring in Matt Dolloff. Matt Dolloff, of course, is a writer for 98.5thesportshub.com. What's going on?
Good morning, gentlemen. Tough one to swallow last night.
You know what?
No.
It wasn't unexpected.
No, exactly.
I don't think you can expect 3-0.
But especially,
you get caught up in the moment where you're like, they could have. RJ said earlier in the show, they could have. They had their chances, but if they get their asses kicked in Game 4, fellas, if they do, and it's a bad loss, then I start to worry. I said this on the air even. It's not that I God knows I don't want them to lose, but if Toronto was a 105-point team, right, they're good. They are good, despite the fact that we saw their flaws in Game 1 and 2. So
if they couldn't come out and take this one last night, then they don't belong to be on the ice with the Bruins. That's how I feel. I mean, I can't go down 3-0 when you're, like you said, a 105-point team and you get all this offensive firepower. You're at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, you expect them to come out strong, which they did. And Tuukka Rask kept the Bruins in the game for most of that first
period.
And by
the way, you expect them... people say, oh, the first 10 minutes are huge. Of course they are. I say, though, it's the first few minutes of the second period that is usually bigger. Because it's like that kid that's, you know, high on... And I don't mean high on... I'm talking like, you know, little kid running around, energy and sugar or whatever. And then your spider senses are up and you run into that wall of that first period intermission. And then you come back out in the second. And if you're not ready to re-elevate... That's where you can get in trouble. And the Bruins didn't do it as much in the second. Toronto did. Yeah. They didn't hit a wall. They came out flying in the second.
And they answered them right away after that McQuaid goal. So,
yeah,
I mean,
that was huge.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about what you've got up on 98.5thesportshub.com today, talking about the Bruins' top line and the chances that they were able to generate last night, you know, especially incredible in the third period. And, I mean, we were talking about that earlier. You know, you give Pasternak like a, you know, half an open net, He's gonna hit that shot. I think Brickley said it last night. 99 times out of 100, he's gonna bury that puck.
You give him those three chances he had in the third period, three more times, he's hitting two of them. I mean, you can't expect Freddie Anderson to make that diving paddle save again, right? Mm. And I mean, he hit the post on the power play, and 25 seconds later, whatever it was, he has a backhand opportunity. He just gets a piece of it. And, you know, yeah, I think there's just a bit of a recency bias going on because you watch that third period and you expect them to get those bury those chances next time. But I mean, early in that game, first half of the game, I think they didn't have as much space to work with as the first two games. They couldn't get to the front of the net like they did in the first two games.
If they had been, I would have been shocked.
Yeah,
I mean, I would have been shocked. I mean, Babcock is he's a pretty damn good coach.
Yeah, he got the matchups he wanted last
night
for the most part.
And he got their intense, he got their emotional level up too.
Yep.
Not just because of the home crowd, he got his players comfortable. I guarantee you, for some, he talked about it post game. There's some young guys here. There's some young guys that need to be recognized as young guys, not as an excuse, but as reality. I don't know if there was coddling going on, Matt, but there was definitely some arms around and saying, "We're going to be all right here."
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. I think. I mean, you saw more energy out of the line with Matthews and Nylander. I thought they had a lot more chances. Obviously, Matthews gets his first goal. But I think the Marner line, Mitch Marner especially, has been their best player in the series, maybe at least their best forward.
Yeah.
And last night you saw it in all three games, really. But, I mean, you put Pekanchuk on that line, and he had some success early. I mean, they got their chances late in the game, especially Bergeron. But, yeah.
It reminded me a bit, fellas, by the way, of the Florida game to end the year, and I said this on Nesson. It reminded me a bit of... Okay, the first two periods were with Florida game were awful, but the third period it was like, all right, we're back, we're awake, and we're going to try and kick ass the last 20 and win this thing. They didn't, but was it 26 shots in that third period? And they dominated. This third period, there was an element of that, like, we haven't been bad, but we haven't been good. Let's see if we can get after it.
I think it was 18-7 shots on goal in the third period for the Bruins. So, I mean, they obviously overwhelmed them late in that game, but to me it was just too little too late.
Right.
You know, they didn't have as much room to operate. They didn't have as much breathing room as they did in the first two periods. And, you know, they just didn't have quite enough.
One of the other things we didn't mention, Billy, was the little dust-up with about 2 minutes left in the game. Marchand ends up going to the box. A little stick swinging going on there.
Yeah, neither would make the Canadian fencing team.
No.
They both missed.
But a little frustration from Marchand or just...
No, he was
reaction.
Pissed off. I mean, look, I'd be pissed off too if somebody cross-checked me in that side like Riley did right there. And Riley's saying, with 2 minutes left, don't be getting near our goalie. It's called hockey, and especially playoff hockey.
I wish they let those go, both of those little plays, you know. What was it, 4-on-4 after that? So,
well, no, see, I don't agree with that because that's too out in the open. Meaning, if you see two guys swinging sticks right there, in front of it, first of all, from a referee's perspective, there's managing the game, and then there's your supervisor saying, you let two guys swing at each other go. Optically, it doesn't look good. I just think at that time, because it's late, because they both got involved, I understand what you're saying. But you know, like what they did, I thought was actually good the other day, was the Hainsey scrap. Who did he fight with in Boston, game two?
Oh, Tim Schaller.
Tim Schaller.
After he hit
they didn't
McMurray.
Call it a fight. They called it a double minor
and
a minor.
Something. Yeah.
Right. Now, people say, wait a second, that should have been a 2-5.
Well, I was going to say, if they called it a fight, he would have had to get an instigator.
Right. And right. to me, that's like, okay. You know, at that time, they know Ron Hainsey. They know Tim Schell. They're both, when I say good guys, meaning they're not guys that are idiots running around out there. And so they said, let's manage the game here. I think they had to call that stick swinging.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, because they were like, you know, they were in the corner. They were far away from the net, away
after
from the play.
After the whistle.
It's just they let so much go in that game.
I agree.
Besides the obvious phantom call in the first. But, I mean.
I agree.
You know, in a game they let stuff. I'm assuming you guys have been talking about that. But, I just think they let it go for the most part, and, you know, it was just a little surprising to me that little stick work puts them in the box that late in the game.
It's playoff hockey. That's all that is right there. I mean, we've seen in other series. And by the way, so the Bruins aren't the only team that was up 2-0 to lose. Now, granted, San Jose ended up winning. Anaheim stinks right now. Jeez. No Cam Fowler. That's devastated them. And they're missing Bieksa, too. But anyways, Tampa loses. In fact, they're winning in that game 3-2, and they end up losing.
Rallied by the Devils.
That game. Nashville is, relatively speaking, never in the game. I mean, they make it at one point, 5-3, 5-2, 5? They're never really in it. Colorado, a depleted Colorado team, comes back and wins. Pitt was up that 1-0 game, 7-0, 1-0 after game one, and then they get throttled in game two. Then they win game three. My point is, stuff happens.
Is it only Vegas that's up 3-0 right now? Everybody else,
San Jose,
2-1?
Too.
San Jose
just did. And by the way, I did pick Vegas to win that series, fellas.
Yes, it's sounding like a good one.
Not in four. I picked Vegas in 7. I'm like, oh boy, I this team is crazy. They've got aces right now, man.
I can't believe what they're doing.
Yeah. What are you working on for 98.5thesportshub.com?
Nothing in particular right now. I gotta go back and look at the film. You know, I gotta go, you know, put together some takeaways. I had takeaways from the first two games, so I think I'm gonna put those together and have some leftover observations and thoughts. So I think that's what's going to be coming up.
I think we're going to talk a lot about the next day or so, 2 days before game four, about any little adjustments the Bruins can make. That'll be one. Neutral zone will be key. Maybe engaging a little bit more along the wall, keeping the pucks to the wall a little more. That's where Toronto doesn't want to play. That's where the Bruins are comfortable playing. And just a little bit more around the Bruins' net, too. And, you know, I mean, like, on that first goal that was scored in the power play, charges couldn't – it happened so fast, he couldn't get his stick on the inside of Van Riemsdyk. And
yeah, he let him get a little too close.
Just
there.
A little close. And but, you know, I mean, we see net front guys oftentimes be left alone now for the goalie to deal with. We see that more, so guys don't over-engage. This is going to be interesting to see how they work going against Van Riemsdyk in the future. Because if you stand next to him, you leave lanes open. You leave a lot of lanes open, and you don't want Chara and his 6'9" off ice, off skates, reach and everything, not engage in the power play.
You know, they were getting those big, long passes out for most of the game, I felt. They were getting behind the
more
defense easily, especially against Torrey Krug, Kevin Miller.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have their best game last night, so
But I don't want those guys to not pinch, though. They were so good at pinching in game two, especially. I do not want to see those guys now hesitant. That's where the forwards have to put the puck into better areas, continue, and the D just have to make sure that if they're going to pinch, that somebody's covering for them.
I thought in the first two games, especially early on, they were great along the wall in the neutral zone. They weren't letting them get those passes, you know, the corner, the blue line in the neutral zone, and I think it's going to be key to just keep blocking them from getting those, you know, huge outlet passes, especially from guys like Marner and from the back end guys like Morgan Riley. You know, their passing was on point last night, the Maple Leafs.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
much better.
Yeah.
Much better.
Matt, thanks for stopping in.
Hey, thanks,
good
guys.
Good to see you as
go
always.
Write something.
I will. Working on it.
All right. Matt Dolov, 98.5thesportshub.com, joining us here on the Extra Ice Time podcast. We've got about 5-6 minutes left, Billy. Where do you want to go here? We've got, look. We talked earlier about having a couple of days off in between games 3 and 4.
I was curious if they were going to stay in Toronto or not, given the magnitude of the series and the coverage up there. And yes, the team is staying up there. Pittsburgh did not stay in Philly after game 3, the one that they won. Now, that was an afternoon game, though.
Right.
And that's a huge difference.
Yeah, it is amazing. For those who don't know, it's amazing how quickly this traveling circus can move. I mean, I filled in a few years ago for then Dave Gosher at a game in Detroit. Played a 12:30 face-off. I was home by like 5:30. I mean, like home in my house having dinner on time that night. It happens very quick. So if you want to get out of there, you can get out of there.
You can mobilize. Yeah. And the beauty of having in the afternoon game is that even if you go overtime, let's say you're still done at 4 o'clock instead of, you know, a 12 o'clock, or I think it's a 1 o'clock start. So let's say the game is usually done at 3:45. You're out of there at 4:45. You're in the air at 5:30.
Yeah.
By the time, because the airport in Philly is real close. I'm using Pitt as an example. But if you go overtime, even if you go into 5 o'clock, so what? You know what I mean? If it goes to overtime, so what? You're still home by 7:30 at night. So if the Bruins were to do that, they would, A, have to clear customs. And I've been up through Canada before where the team that I've been associated with wins. All of a sudden, man, oh, man, we're at the airport for a lot longer. What is they're going through the bags and they're this. And you, but you, so you do have to deal with that. And the other thing is, I've got to imagine that the weather played a factor. It was crappy in Canada, in Toronto yesterday. And it's not going to be great. But, you know, the point is, so you're checked out of the hotel. Let's play it out if you're the Bruins. You check out of the hotel because you want to go home. You go to overtime. Oh, wait a second. It's still icy on the roads. Next thing you know, you're not flying out until 2 in the morning. So you're not getting home until 3:30. Then point is, then you've absolutely screwed the day up.
By the way, for those who haven't seen it online, and I'm sure we will be getting the whole story on Saturday morning on our regular hockey show, the broadcast crews do not travel on the team charter
in playoffs,
during the course of the playoffs. Yeah. And so our guys, Judd, Bob, Andy Brickley, Jack Edwards, their flight got canceled.
They were all on different flights.
They were all on different flights?
Yeah, because what happens is when you don't know who you're playing in playoffs.
Right.
So you get your matchup. Then you say, okay, we know we're playing Toronto. What days?
You don't know the
and
schedule
then you get
yet,
the schedule.
Yeah.
And I've lived this for years and years and years. You need to make your reservations right away, because especially when it's Toronto, this is not Tampa, Boston, where there's three guys from Tampa covering the team. This
right,
is,
there's a throng of people from Toronto.
30, if not 40 people. So all of a sudden, flights are gobbled up like that. You add the Bruins people traveling, you add Toronto. Next thing you know, there were no flights. So like, for instance, Judd, he gets online, and the only flights that are available were for him were like 6:15 at night on Sunday. So he puts himself on that one to fly out. I think Bob had put himself on like an 8 o'clock one, the last one heading out. I don't know when Andy and Jack had, regardless, they're all getting canceled.
Flights got canceled. And so they load into the SUV, and Bob Beers drives them all the way to Toronto.
Yes, they met. They got the truck, the rental, and drove up there. And I guess Beersy drove the entire way.
And made good time, from what I hear.
Well, I think it's an eight to nine-hour drive.
They made it an 8, and that includes crossing the border. So
wow,
that's pretty good.
That's a solid clip. That's a solid 75, if not 80 miles. Well, I don't know what that translates to kilometers once you cross the border. But that's good for them. And dealing with weather. And by the way, they weren't the only ones from Boston who ended up having to drive.
No. I would imagine a lot of them did.
All the writers,
because again, they're all kind of traveling, hopefully, right around the same time. They
exactly.
need to get up there for, you know, for morning skates and everything.
Yeah.
All right. Couple of minutes left. Looking forward to game 4 Thursday night.
Yeah.
And I would anticipate what we saw out of Toronto on Monday night, we're going to see some of that out of the Bruins on Thursday night, which is they're going to come out harder, stronger, especially at the outset of that game.
They will, but I think the Bruins come out composed. If they keep their composure, that's huge for them. The Air Canada Center, which I know is looked good, it's not as loud as the Garden. It's still, you know, you're still the visiting team in an opponent's rink. But you come out, don't get caught up in that moment. You can't win the game in the first few minutes, but if you do some stupid things, you can really put your team in a bad spot and help lose the game. So just go out there, chill out, play your game, finish. And I do think they're going to be all right. I don't know if that means they win on Tuesday, but if they play well on Tuesday, I still think if they play really, really well in Toronto, I think they got close to playing with this lineup as well as they can.
Well, that was going to be my question. 3 games in.
Yeah.
And obviously, as the series goes on, Kadri's going to eventually come back in the lineup and all that. Yeah. But 3 games in, is there any doubt in your mind that the Bruins are the better team right now?
Not if they keep their composure. No. That I think if they keep their composure, they're the better team.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Extra Ice Time podcast. We're back with you Saturday morning, 9 to 11. We'll have the whole gang in studio before Game 5.
We know there
will be a Game 5, and Kadri will be back at the Garden on Saturday night. So we'll talk to you then. Thanks for being with us.